This is our Comic-Con 2019 preview podcast. I'm Ryan Gallagher, and joining me tonight, Matthew Patterson. Hey, Matt.
Hello, Ryan. I'm so pleased to be your guest because I have spent so much time not poring over the schedule or anything because I am busy preparing myself for Comic-Con. And then the problem is, of course, as I'm supposed to be preparing, I'm going through the schedule and I'm looking at all the things I won't be able to do because I'll be working.
Speaking of preparing, like before we even talk about the panels,
yeah,
I don't know if this has ever come up in our discussions before Comic-Con, but like, do you do anything to like mentally prepare yourself for Comic-Con?
I do. This will be, for Warner Brothers, I think this will be my 11th Comic-Con. And they have, you know, it started out like as an experiment, and now it's something that I've done with multiple panels for years. And what I have come to know is that no matter, and I'm not a stressed out person, but no matter how much or what I prepare for, it is a mental and physical shock to my body.
Do you find anything, have you found anything that helps with that?
Well, right now, what I mostly use is an incredible amount of compartmentalization and denial. But this morning, I will reveal something embarrassing. I'm feeling good, right? And that's a very good thing. And I'm like, I'm feeling healthy. But I woke up this morning and I'm like, oh my God, I have a herpes sore on my lip. And I'm like, I'm not sick. I'm not, like, nothing's wrong. And then I'm like, oh wait, you can get them from stress. I'm feeling no stress, yet my body is already launching a viral attack.
Oh my God.
So that is frightening. And also I'm hoping that I don't have a big bloody scab in a week, but I think it'll be okay. I think it'll clear up.
Luckily, you're when you're sitting at one of those panels, you're like far enough away from the audience where like they might.
I'm in the rooms with the cameras. So there might be a moment where a giant herpes sore is going to be on 2K above my head. But if that doesn't happen, then I will say it's a success. Yeah, I think it was, last year, I lost my voice for 4 months. And then the year before that, I got an eye infection that was so bad I couldn't see out of my right eye. So, or that might have been the year before that. So every time something horrible happens to my body, yet, I am totally fine and this is going to be great.
Do you...
That's all true. That's what's so sad. It's like, I am actually like really calm throughout the whole thing, but my body takes a toll.
Do you have any like special technology that you bring just for Comic-Con, like special chargers that you've like found are the best for?
I travel quite a bit and you know, like Comic-Con is like car camping, but and there is a camping element to it. And I don't, you can overpack for Comic-Con, but sometimes I even change rooms and change hotels and I'm walking miles and miles around. So the more compact technological solutions, the better. I have a Mophie, right, which holds a pretty good charge. I have, obviously, my laptop, which I run panels off of. Last year we had 4 panels. This year only 3, lacking. And so I'll have, and that'll have, you know, like I'll have backups of everything, right? And then I have a lot of like crazy, am I going to get sick, like packets and health yeah. things. But it's like the less you take, the better you are, and the more chargers and plugs, but like smaller, the better. And I have duplicates of almost everything because I also need to have a lot of converters and things. So because you have to assume something is going to break. So yeah, I guess I do prepare.
Do you have backups of the panel, like presentations, in case your laptop breaks and you need to?
Okay, I have it on the laptop. And then I try not to carry around the external hard drive, which not only has the editing source files, right, in case I need to make a correction, but we'll have backups. Then I put the videos in a Dropbox as well and on an FTP site. So I have quadruple backup. God. Well, then you so like kind of the last thing is I'm like, oh, what do I do when I'm not doing an event? And then I love talking to you about this because not only do I learn the things I haven't found out yet, but I will now probably spend until 2 or 3 in the morning researching everything because I have 20 million other things to do.
Well, we'll definitely talk about your panels tonight.
Oh,
and, but then
I've already talked. I've already talked about them and promised a herpes sore.
So as usual, like we usually do, we'll go day by day through the week and kind of talk about some highlights and maybe some things that we'd like to go to, but maybe we're going to be in a different panel at that time. There are several big panels that I can't miss, and then there are like 10 other ones that I'm going to have to miss because I'm going to be in those panels, but I just wanted to talk about them anyway because they look pretty exciting.
You know, there's always a good panel, and I think the quality of panels has risen. Even like the, we'll call them the mid-grade panels. Like, I think that people are learning the art of putting on a good panel, right? Like, I mean, the bigger the panel, the more it's just like, hey, let's put up 5 celebrities, you know, actors, and they can just talk, and people love that. But like, I've seen some like quality presentations that are not necessarily in the big rooms that I walk away being very impressed with. So those are the ones that I look for. The diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, even in Hall H this year, there are several panels that I actually want to go to this year. Like before, it's like, you know, the big studio is bringing their big tentpole movies, and every year they seem to kind of get whittled down. More studios are kind of pulling out of presenting in Hall H. But even still, like, even though those big studios are not going to be there, there are still, you know, there's something every day that I would want to go see if I was able to.
And I kind of agree. I mean, I've seen some amazing Hall H panels, but sometimes I've seen some actually really uninspiring ones that are just sort of surprised that they're in that room. But this year I've seen some in there, which normally maybe they'd be in a ballroom 20 or something smaller. And I'm like kind of excited to see if they bring their A game to the table.
Yes.
It's almost like we're talking about sports. I just realized I was like, I'm using sports metaphors.
Well, I mean, we don't really have to talk too much about preview night. Preview night is like, there's not very much going on as usual. And it also, because it is now like so many years into still calling it preview night, like
I know
they may as well just call it Wednesday and have that be the first day.
It's shopping night.
It's
for
shopping
me.
Night.
I mean, cause right. Like, I mean, there are a few good events, but that's when you hit the floor. So you don't have to hit the floor on Thursday morning.
Yeah. But even still, like that is now just, that makes it even worse. Like it makes it even more crowded, and that's where everyone is running to like get in line for some exclusive. And so like, it feels like now Wednesdays and now Sundays, like, cause Sunday, everyone says like, you know, go on Sunday, take your kids on Sunday. And that's the day you can go shopping because there's not very many panels. But then when every person at Comic-Con is doing that same thing, it makes it unbearable now on Wednesday nights and Sundays to do anything.
I still feel that, and, you know, maybe this is because this is why I send myself to the doctor, but I love being there as the floor closes. Right.
Yes. That like the last few minutes are really fun.
And that it, because it's like a game show, number one, because it's like how much can you shop till you drop? And number two, there are less people because people just kind of drop out. They're like, oh my God, it's 3 p.m. I've got to go. And I'm like, oh, that means I've got 2 hours. And that's when stuff starts getting 50% off.
Yes, that's totally true. The last like 30 minutes of the floor is when you can actually like walk around and see things.
I know, and I'm always sad because that's when I actually get to like see stuff at the pace that I like, and I'm like, wait, it's over? And
Yeah.
then I have to, and then what I do is I go have dinner because I want the traffic to die down.
Yeah.
All right, we just went from Wednesday to Sunday.
I know.
Bye-bye, everybody. It's over.
So on Thursday morning, there's a couple of big things that are like Warner related that I'm excited
Yes.
about. Okay, so the first one, Popeye's 90th birthday party. Like,
Skip it.
you guys have been releasing the Popeye Blu-rays, and so
Yes.
I'm very excited to see what's in store at
So
this
we
panel.
have, I've been putting that is one of the panels that I've been putting together. Today I've been pulling the clip and, we've been working with King Features. And so this is really like the problem here is how do you tell 90 years of history in 50 minutes, right? And we're gonna try not to linger very hard over the first 30 years, but it's like I think that's where a little bit of the focus is gonna be because that's where we've put a lot of effort into remastering and preserving the classic short theatrical short films, but we're going to take it right up to this year because we've got some clips from some new stuff from King Features, and we're going to have some artists, and I had to tell Dan when we're like, oh, we're doing Popeye's 90th birthday, and he's like, well, Olive is 100. I'm like, all right, we can't start there. That's we don't have enough time.
Is there any, do you feel any pressure either like from yourself or from outside forces to like avoid the more problematic parts of cartoons from the 30s, 40s, 50s that might be have elements in them
Yeah, there look, there are history is constantly evolving, and there is sort of a moving target on what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And comedy certainly has had great changes, even within the last like 10 or 15 years. There are certain jokes that people are making in the early 2000s where they've come out and said, "Ooh, I would not do that material anymore." And there are multiple ways to handle that. And what we tend to do is we tend to label stuff that this is for an adult collector because we hope that people are able to recognize that certain things are not cool anymore, right? There is a large kind of a counter a concept where some of the stuff like why even preserve it, right? Why even make it available if it's questionable or awful? And I personally don't really agree with that. That's not that's because I choose to I want to see it in its and I understand the context. And and as but as time goes on, it's interesting. Will we be showing some of those things at Comic-Con? No. I mean, there are some things that show the attitudes at the time, but this isn't there are different times and places where you can explore that stuff in depth, but no, you won't be seeing. So don't come expecting to see horrible clips. Because you won't.
So, the next panel that I will probably try to race over to after the Popeye one is In Hall H. There's going to be a Batman Beyond 20th anniversary panel that Warner Home Video is going to be putting together.
And I am going to really try to get in. I'm probably going to try to go in through the back, because that is... I love that those guys got an upgrade to Hall H, because Batman Beyond and that, and the same crew, mostly, not everybody, but especially the voice cast, you know, that did Batman the Animated Series, they had an incredible panel last year.
Yeah.
And this is a continuation of that, you know, like, but Batman Beyond is so 90s that it hurts. Right?
I don't think I've watched it since, it's probably been over 10 years since I watched the show, because whenever it was that the DVDs first started coming out is when I think I started rewatching it after seeing it live when it was, you know, on the air.
Right.
Were you
one of those people who was like, wait, Batman doesn't have a cape?
Oh, no. I loved it at the time. I thought it was like back in the late 90s was when it was airing. And I remember watching it and totally it clicking perfectly for me. Like, it was a great continuation.
It's like Batman Matrix.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, you know, this is a great time to rediscover it again. It's a, you know, it has distressed fonts from the late 90s, which date it, but it dates kind of fun. Like, it's a lot of fun, and it's got the, you know, there's the classic Batman Animated Series cast, and they are wonderful. And I hope that this reaches a larger audience.
Well, yeah, I think, like, being in Hall H, like, you know, there's going to be a Terminator panel right before this one, and then there's going to be a few Marvel panels afterwards, but...
Yeah, I imagine there's going to be some people exposed to 1999 Batman that maybe haven't, and so I'm kind of excited for that. So I definitely want to catch that one myself.
Totally. I think when the Batman TV, like when the 60s Batman TV series, that was in Hall H also, and that was pretty exciting too, to see, you know, when that was announced for Blu-ray, and it, you know, they had the picture of the, you know, the box set and everything. That was pretty exciting.
I was up, I was in the like 40th row, which seemed very close. And I loved it. That was one of my favorite Hall H panels. Yeah. I actually got to meet Adam West for like 2 minutes that year, which was a Comic-Con highlight. I made him swear, which was also a Comic-Con highlight.
Right as that one is ending, there is going to be a panel upstairs in 6BCF with Leonard Maltin, another one of the You're Wrong Leonard Maltin panels that he's doing with his daughter.
There are always some great, what I guess you'd call them, like film Twitter
panels. Sure.
And film Twitter represents quite well at Comic-Con. Like, a lot of people who haven't gone wouldn't think that it would, but Comic-Con is so large that there is a lot of movie love outside of like superheroes and you know, animation and stuff.
Definitely. Like, the on Friday there's going to be Alicia Malone is going to be back with her Future of Film is Female panel that she's been doing now for like a couple of years,
which is like, you know, that sounds like a panel out of like Sundance or something.
But
you know, and you get a crowd, like people who go to Comic-Con have a variety of tastes, and it's a great place to chat with people, right? Because you're all stuck in the sun and sweating.
The next panel that I would probably try to go to after, I'll probably try to go to a little bit of Leonard Maltin after Batman Beyond, and then from there there's another Disney animator panel called Cartoon Legends Speak, where they are going to get a number of you know, previous Disney animators who have been at Comic-Con panels over the years. And that's another one that I'm looking forward to.
What time are you up to? You know, because I sort of just wrote down some panels that I like. I haven't really made a schedule yet.
Oh, so, okay. Here's my tip that if you want is worth trying out. I just today, Comic-Con released the PDFs of their quick guides. They hand those out, you know, at Comic-Con when you get there. They also do like daily kind of like newspaper versions of them.
Those are the ones that look like old school TV guide.
Yeah, they're perfect. They're great to just like carry around and highlight and exactly.
Yeah, they're better than the phone. Like I tend to use the phone app, which is like, because I'm the person who's like, I'm standing here. What is available right now?
Totally. And
that I can walk to.
Like the grid version of it, when you can look at everything and see like, okay, if I have this one highlighted, but if I can't get into that one, then I have these other ones highlighted along that same column and I can easily just run over to this other room instead.
Yeah, that's good.
So right now, so the Cartoon Legends speak is at like 2 o'clock going to 3 o'clock. After that, there's the Spike and Mike's Festival of Animation.
Always fun.
Yeah, always fun. Not the Sick and Twisted, but just the regular one.
Yeah.
At 3 o'clock also, like right around that same time, there's a new episode premiere of Teen Titans Go, which I am excited about and I might try to get Miranda into. I know there's also like on Sunday, there's going to be the panel for Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans.
Yeah. That looks really good. Does your kid like Teen Titans?
She does. I mean, I got her into it because of the Blu-ray that the Warner Archive had released. And so like, we started watching all of season one and then we had to go jump over to like Hulu, I think, to watch the other seasons. And then she watched the movie, loved the movie. Like, yeah, she's totally into it. Yeah,
that's good. That's good. I'm now totally throwing you off, but what are the main things that she wants to see?
So she's probably not going to come for the whole weekend. Right. She definitely can't handle that. But there are
two humans can.
Exactly. Yeah. One person that she's really has to meet is this artist, Katie O'Neill, who is a illustrator from New Zealand, who she's done a few comics and she's also done a few kind of children's book comic graphic novels. Most recently there was the Tea Dragon Society and then another one called like Aquacorn Cove, which is kind of similar in style, but it's from Oni Press, who is based out here in Portland. And she's from New Zealand. And so she doesn't get over to the States very often. And she's going to be there. And so Miranda definitely has to be at that panel. That same day, I think Friday is when there's also going to be a She-Ra panel in the morning, right at the same time as your panel, the V panel. And that's going to be tricky.
I'm sure she doesn't really remember V.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to convince her to go to the V panel over She-Ra.
That is totally understandable.
The new She-Ra series on Netflix, by the way, if you haven't watched it, it's so good.
No, I haven't.
It's great.
I
thought they did an amazing job. Noelle Stevenson, the woman who is kind of the showrunner behind it, she's done like that comic series Lumberjanes. She's amazing, and they just did such an incredible job. I think like the animation is beautiful, and the stories are really well done, and everything. It's just a really nice update that is something that I, you know, actually enjoy watching with Miranda as we watch it on Netflix instead of just the thing that I come and I'm like, okay, well, I'll tolerate this.
Those are the two kinds of shows you have to watch with a kid, right?
Exactly.
Yes. It's like there's that, or an Australian mermaid show or something. I'm not trying to put down Australian mermaid shows. I know that they have a lot of fans.
What was the name of that Australian mermaid show? Like H2O or something? Like
my niece was super into it for a while and I made kind of jokes about it, and then one day she was like, I hate that show. Which is also what I love about kids, is that they could be totally in love with something and then 25 minutes later, they're like, I hate that, never speak of it again.
Yeah, and then you know what, though? Like, you wait a few years and then they're like, and they go right back to it and they're like, oh yeah, I love that thing again.
Yeah.
And can we watch it over from the beginning?
She did say something like that. And I'm like, how do you keep track?
Yeah.
I just consistently hate something for 20 years. And then I admit to, then I go, okay, I guess it's good. I was wrong. But that's hard.
The folks at Shout Factory have a few different panels going on over the weekend. But one on Thursday that they're connected with is the 20th anniversary of the show Home Movies.
Oh, I'm glad that they're doing more than one panel, by the way, because I always think that's a good thing to do. And I didn't know that they were Home Movies. That's really clever. That's good.
I think the other panels that they have are, so they definitely have their regular Shout Factory, Scream Factory one, which
that
unfortunately
was the only one I saw, which was
it's like at 8 o'clock at night on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's always at night. Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate time slot for them. I mean, maybe not. Like maybe there will be enough. You know, I'm sure there will be room for everyone to go because it's so late. But it's like, they couldn't have got it a little bit earlier in the day, but
I think that's just in panel strategy. I think it's smart for them to do it with shows because they'll get an earlier slot during the day. Like we got some behind the scenes. We got really great rooms this year, like with, you know, like the bigger 1,000-person rooms. But we're the opening panel every
that's
day.
Tough.
Which is, that's like, it's not as bad as the 8 o'clock problem, but it's the like people, you know, by Saturday, people are waking up about the time that we're starting. So you know, got to be a super fan, but you should come out, wake up early, go to bed early.
Anyway. I know that is going to make it a little bit harder for me to get to the panel on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, but by the way, which is why I don't, you know, if you can't get in, that's okay.
On Thursday night, there's a couple other panels. There's going to be a panel on Alien, like the 40th anniversary of Alien. There's going to be a panel on Zorro, 100-year anniversary of Zorro.
Oh, cool.
And I think that's about it. I have a few other things highlighted, but like those are mostly the film geek related things. You know, there's a panel on like marginalized voices in science fiction, fantasy, and horror. That sounds kind of interesting. And but then also like, you know, comics PR and marketing, and like that sounds kind of interesting also from you know, like having been kind of exposed to the PR and marketing world through like the film site aspect of it. Like I'd be curious to hear what like the comic book industry has to deal with or like, you know, kind of talk about on a panel.
I know people who do that. It is interesting, and a lot of those panels are mostly for creators, right? Because if you're drawing, you know, your specialty is you're a writer, an artist, you don't really, you know, do your own PR, and it's hard, right? And in comics, PR is hard all around. So those are interesting panels. But mostly it's like, you know, use social media well. There, I did the panel for you.
On Thursday, there's a few other things kind of outside of the convention center too that are worth paying attention to, I think. The library is expanding, like the central library, which is just a few blocks away from, it's kind of close to the ballpark, I think. And they have a series of, like, I think they have like a few different rooms there.
They have a really good list of like interesting panels. I really like the panels, but I actually have no idea where that building is.
Well,
I know you just said it's by the
it's kind of near where the sushi place was that we went to a long time ago that actually is closed now. But it's like, you know, on the south side of the ballpark is like kind of close to where the big library is. And that's where it has like a big fancy sculpture on the outside of it, I think. So it might be recognizable from afar.
I'll use the Google.
Yeah. Well, on Thursday, they have like, in one of the rooms at the library, they're doing like a series of panels that are kind of podcast related. So like, they're doing, you know, the TV series Lost, they had like that, there was that podcast, the Jay and Jack podcast. And so they're going to have a panel. These guys have been doing it. I think they've been doing it every year now for like, I got to say at least 10 years, because it was, you know, they were doing it a couple of years before the finale of the show. And that was, I think they have kept doing shows like over the years, just to kind of talk about either the show or the community and the podcast and everything.
Cool.
And then after that, there's like a Game of Thrones discussion, which I think is people from one of the Game of Thrones podcasts. But then after that, there's like there's a business of podcasting one and everything.
And those are like the public can go to these?
That's a good question. I can't remember now if you have to have a badge to get into the library panels or if anyone can go.
I think the library you don't have to, but I could be wrong.
I think you're right, and I think there are some off-site things that you need a badge for and some that you don't.
Right. The theater, you need a badge, and you need to line up.
Yeah, the theater.
Like a special line.
I have one thing highlighted for the Horton Grand Theater that I definitely don't want to miss, but there's going to be a Art of Ghibli panel at like 4:30, I think. And one of the guys who is a part of Studio Ghibli, but like not Miyazaki, is going to be there to talk about working with the studio. And I think he still might be on the team, like the Studio Ghibli team, and just talking about that. So that, I don't know if that's going to be a hard thing to get into, but I'm going to try to get a ticket for that. I think that's one of those things where, like, in the past, you have to, like, either go to the sales pavilion really early in the morning to get tickets for the Horton Theater, or go to the theater later in the day and kind of hope to get a ticket.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to do, I remember reading there was some sort of, you could enter in and then you find out if you got a ticket or not or something.
Yeah.
I can't tell, I can't be of any help.
Usually we do a, or I guess like maybe not usually, but in the past we've done meetups on Thursday nights. We're not going to do like an official meetup again this year, but, for listeners and friends who are around, I'm sure we'll all be out and about. Over the night on Wednesday night, for any Criterion Cast listeners who have maybe not heard the news, but David Blakesley, one of our podcast hosts and blogger extraordinaire, is going to be he's on a like a California road trip right now, and he's going from like the Bay Area down to Los Angeles, and then from Los Angeles he's going to be heading down to San Diego and leaving the first day of Comic-Con, like on Thursday, but he's going to be there on Wednesday on preview night. And so if anyone wants to hang out with me and David and presumably David Bax and maybe you, Matt, like there might be, you know, a chance to meet David Blakesley in the flesh after all the, I mean, I've met him before in Portland, but, you know, it'll be fun to like hang out with him outside of, you know, family stuff.
Yeah. No, Wednesday is, a fun night because everyone seems vaguely confused. Like, it's like, I think there are parties. What are we doing? What do I have to do still? You know, where I love to hang out every night at some point is, of course, Ghirardelli's.
Yes.
That is, not only does it have ice cream, which is important, it is ice cream that's the sundaes are 1200 calories. And a lot of times I forget to eat dinner, and so that becomes a meal. And we run into people because we're just sitting out there on the sidewalk. So if you see me or Ryan and you want to do damage, just come and pour an ice cream over my head. And maybe it will cure me of some disease.
I also love that they give you those little free chocolate samples when you go in.
Yeah, there. You know, I've been to a lot of parties and things at San Diego, and over the years, I've been more consistently entertained by getting ice cream than going anywhere else.
Same.
I don't know what that says about me, other than the fact that I love ice cream. But it's like, I think it's like more relaxing there. And that is still the kind of place where there are locals who come by and call you nerd as you sit there eating ice cream with children.
So on Friday, as we mentioned, there's going to be a Warner Archive Celebrates V, the original miniseries.
Yes.
That's going to be at 10 a.m. in 6DE.
Yeah.
you are hard at work right now planning it?
Oh, I am very hard at work. I have met with the Kenneth Johnson, the director slash creator slash writer. He has given me some assets that are not on the Blu-ray nor the DVD to show, and they're pretty funny. They're good. He has a lot of stories about how it came to be, and he has a lot of feelings on why it is relevant. Even it's probably more relevant now than it was in 1983. And of course, we're going to have the Beastmaster himself, Mark Singer, who played an ordinary TV reporter who takes on the spoiler alert lizard, not the alien guinea pig eaters. Is it a spoiler? I mean, no. You know, if it was 1983, yes, spoiler. But it isn't. So I hope you've had 30 years or so so that didn't ruin it for you.
It's amazing to think of all now having gone through like there was a V reboot a few years ago, or actually like more than a few. Yeah. 2009.
Like so 10. Like it feels like a few years ago.
I remember going to like the panel in Ballroom 20, like before that show came out and them kind of like talking about its relevance in, you know, society now. And, you know, it was kind of like on the heel as Battlestar Galactica was kind of winding down.
Right.
And that was going to be like, oh, well, maybe we can recapture some of this same energy by rebooting this show too.
And you know, the that show made some different creative choices, not just special effects, that I don't believe really matched what the earlier one had done. And you know, when you cast a moral story, right? Like when you use science fiction to kind of tell a universal tale, it is timeless, right? It can always seem there are movies that are like, and it's more relevant today than ever, right? You could say that about a lot of movies, but this one, it's more than 2009, like 10 years later, it's suddenly like the fantasy of waking up one day and all of a sudden someone has taken over your government and under a false flag, if you will, is seems more realistic, at least more realistic than it did in 1983 when the network NBC was like, well, will people really buy this? Well, maybe we need to make it like with a spaceship. Then people will believe, which is kind of extraordinary. But come to the panel and you'll hear more. Not coming secondhand from me, but coming from people who were there making those creative decisions at the time.
Has there been an official announcement of like the home video release through
We're doing a Blu-ray. We will be announcing it. But it's in the panel description.
That was in the description?
Yeah, I mean, it said, yeah, but people overload, which is fine, by the way, right? Like, we're announcing it at the panel, but it's pretty clear that's what we're doing. And you will be seeing footage from the Blu-ray. And it's one of the interesting things about taking TV movies and putting them on Blu-ray and doing 2K scans is that you can really say they have never been seen like this before, right? Some sure. TV movies got an international theatrical release, so you know, so they might have been seen on film, right, in a big screen in, you know, like England or Germany or something. But what's interesting about this one is that he had planned for it. He didn't know if it was going to go, but he shot it like a movie in, you know, a standard, you know, with 1.85 format, 16x9, because he did not want a 4x3 image to be cropped if it went out theatrically overseas. So we will be talking about that.
So at the same time as that panel, there's going to be the She-Ra panel in the room right next to it, which is kind of interesting. And I wonder how that might affect the two different lines next to each other.
This kind of shows like how much good stuff there is, you know.
Definitely.
I mean, look, I would probably want to go to the V panel if I wasn't, you know, putting it on. but the She-Ra panel sounds pretty cool too. It's like, oh, those are good, and that's at 10 a.m. right? Yeah. Like that's kind of neat.
It's interesting also to like look at the grid and see what else is in the same room later that day and think about,
you know, what is think about that.
What are people going to be camping out for later on in the day if they camp out at all?
And if you want to know too, I look at the Comic-Con schedule. App, like, you know,
to see how many people have like expressed interest in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not scientific, but it gives you sort of a relative sense of how popular your panel may or may not be. And you know, it's been wrong, but I generally also look at it to see what the interest is on the panel before, if you have a panel after 10 a.m. or after. You know, to see, because sometimes, I mean, you've been to some of our panels where the room is mostly packed with people waiting for the next panel.
I mean, I still remember the time when there was one of your Trailers from Hell panels, and there was just like the room was packed for whatever was going to be happening later on that day.
Yeah.
And like people around me were like, what is Trailers from Hell? Like asking me like to explain to them what it was.
Yeah, it was, I think Mass Effect that year.
Oh yeah.
And, there were some people like from here who were there who were like, what are all these people from a video game doing here? And you know, we tried to explain everything, but it's always fun for me to do a show for people who have no idea who you are or anything like that. I see it as a good challenge.
Yeah, for sure.
Gotta win them over.
Right after your panel, in a couple of rooms over, there's going to be a panel on women of the Hollywood art department. Sounds pretty cool. After that, there's going to be a spotlight on the comic artist Seth, who has done quite a few Criterion covers. He's done like the covers for like My Man Godfrey and Make Way for Tomorrow and City Lights. And every year I try to find like what few Criterion connections I can find at Comic-Con. And this is definitely I found it. Last year there was a different artist, like a Brazilian artist who has done a few covers for Criterion too, that I was like, okay, well, if anything, I have to go to that panel because, you know, this is like my prime Criterion connection.
Yeah. Well, I tried to find, and there's one at noon on Friday, which is Entertaining Science, the Real, Fake, and Sometimes Ridiculous Ways Science Are Used in Film and TV.
Oh, yeah. I love those panels so much.
I love panels like that. Yeah. Like, like that's definitely one I would pop in. I went to one at a WonderCon, and I know the woman who does it has done it at Comic-Con as well, and it's sort of like, making real life potions, and she's a botanist, right? And so she kind of goes through fantasy potions, and she kind of like explains what the mixtures and the ingredients are based off of in real life and how you could make a real life version of that. I love that panel so much.
Yeah, there in the past, they've done, and I think there might even be more panels like that at Comic-Con this year, too, where they get, like, science advisors to come on and talk about, like, their role on different TV shows. There have been panels like Science of Science Fiction, where like they just like, you know, bring on the people who were behind things like Battlestar Galactica, or you know, the science advisors basically who like also work for NASA and who have been called on by TV shows to kind of help come up with like believable, plausible storylines featuring real science and how that might work in a show like this.
I saw one like that, and they had some cast members too for The Expanse, which was one of my all-time favorite panels. I guess I have a lot of all-time favorite panels. But it was great because they spent a lot of time talking about orbits and how complex they are.
Yeah.
And filming zero and microgravity. It was really interesting.
At 1 o'clock, there's also... At 1 o'clock, there's like three different panels, or four different panels, I guess, that I really want to go to. That there's like this. There's the Steven Universe panel, which I imagine they're going to talk about like the new movie that they're making. There's going to be a panel on the Masters of the Illustrated Film Poster.
Oh,
and yes, also that one sounds.
Oh, yeah, I see it now. And I'm following along at home.
The Katie O'Neill spotlight, the artist that I was talking about previously, the one who Miranda's excited to go see. So we're definitely going to go to that one. But then also, you know, Rick and Morty, there's a music panel.
I see one called Hollywood Location Scout.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's actually really cool.
Totally. And... yeah. There's like, in that's the same room where the Women of the Hollywood Art Department panel is in earlier that day. Yeah. And then like after Hollywood Location Scouts, then you get Building Cinematic Dreams. Like there's some pretty good movie panels in that room.
Yeah. But this is a solid movie panel. Like it's, and they're going to show like slides and stuff and like how they find, fake land, like, the guy who found Asgard in Australia, which I'm like, oh, I would have never thought of that.
So after 2 o'clock, then there's going to be a panel at the Indigo Ballroom for the new Genndy Tartakovsky animated series on Adult Swim called Primal. And this is going to be, you know, it's on Adult Swim and not Cartoon Network. So it's going to be a little bit more like, you know, adult, I guess. It's going to have some blood.
Is that the Indigo Room? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So across the way at the Indigo Bar. Yeah.
And Indigo Room is a great place because it's easy to get into and you can just sit in the back. And then the TV panels there, because it's like Cartoon Network, Adult Swim. Have you even seen like Geek and Sundry panels? Like, I just sit there and am entertained, like, while I'm eating lunch or whatever.
Totally.
That's a hot tip.
And it's usually not too hard, although, like, depending on what's going on in Hall H, sometimes that whole area, trying to get out of Comic-Con to the Indigo Ballroom can be a nightmare. Sometimes it's easy and there's no problem at all. But sometimes when they have, like, when they're trying to feed people in and out of Hall H at that time... then it's like it's impossible almost to get across the way to the ballroom.
Hall H crossing is difficult. What I would suggest, if you stick to the main street and kind of go around through the parking garage, that's a good shortcut.
Oh, like through the back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess I just thought that you could go across the way to where the ballpark is and then go over that bridge.
You could. That's a little kooky. Also, if you can get to the shore. Right, like a walk along like the promenade.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another way.
There's gonna be
good luck.
Yeah, I know, totally. Later after that, there's a few panels that I have, like, okay, so also The Future of Film is Female, the Alicia Malone one that we were talking about earlier. Everyone should go support her there. She's great. And, you know, if you've watched any TCM or Filmstruck or...
I've never heard of those things.
Well, I'll put some links in the show notes for the people who might not know who she is.
Oh.
There's going to be a panel on British girl horror comics. I forget now what the...
that's cool.
And then there's going to be also a panel that I think Miranda's going to be into where it's like, Graphics, which is Scholastic's graphic novel line of books. They're going to have a panel at 4 o'clock. in Hall H around that same time is when Netflix is going to be showing off the new Dark Crystal thing
yeah,
that they're
doing.
Yeah,
I saw that in Hall H, yeah.
You know, it's interesting also, like, as the big studios kind of pull out of presenting at Hall H, now it's time for people like Netflix or Amazon or, you know, the other big studios. I mean, I'm surprised that, like, Apple didn't try to put together something for Comic-Con for some of their shows that they're working on.
You know, the expense of Hall H is just really getting talent down there. It's actually not, like, too terribly expensive. Of course, like, somebody like Netflix or Apple or anybody should come, because it's a great, if you have something that people are even a little familiar with, right? Like it's a great place to present your idea, and a new idea, because people have come to Comic-Con, they've spent their money and their time and their energy to be wowed, right? And it isn't, I mean, of course you can, you know, seeing the latest thing from the latest franchise and the stars in person is always great, but it's a time to shine, people. Sorry, just lecturing.
So,
because I'm going to be going at 3 p.m. to So You Want to Be a Comic Book Retailer. Because I hear that's a big business, and I'm going to jump right into that. I'm going to miss classic versus current Doctor Who.
Well, if you stay in that comic book retailer room, there's an Arkham
also good
panel right after that. Although I'd imagine that he's not going to be there.
I'd imagine. I mean, but that's, again, it's just kind of interesting. Like, every room's got some winners.
Oh yeah,
winners in every room.
After into the evening, there's going to be another kind of female film panel featuring Hollywood executives called Entertainment is Female, Hollywood Executives. That's going to be in 25 ABC at 5 o'clock. There's there's an animation, like, industry panel in kind of a nearby room. There's also, like, a NASA panel in that same area. Like, there's so many cool things, like, one right after another. There's, like, a Ray Harryhausen The Lost Movies panel.
Cool.
A panel on the 75th anniversary of EC Comics. And
not important to the history of comics at all.
No. And then there's, you know, later on that evening in Ballroom 20, they're going to have their big premiere of the new Batman animated film based on the Hush series, or the Hush, like, you know, the mini series from the Batman comics from, you know, I don't know, like 15 years ago?
Probably when that came out. It's a more recent one.
But yeah, that's a great series, and I can't wait to see how that animated one turns out. I mean, it's pretty exciting to see, you know, talking about Warner Brothers for a second, like, you know, their DC expanded, or their DC film cinematic universe is kind of like, you know, it's a little all over the place. It's kind of like still trying to find its feet, I guess is a nice way of saying it.
After 10 years, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And so, but they have managed to, like, release consistently just like these pretty great animated films over the course, like, consistently too, like every year they're releasing several great animated movies, and, you know, they're well done, well voice acted, adult in nature, you know, they're violent and, you know, contain lots of swearing, but
from a let's call it a film and home video collection standpoint, they have been very consistent and direct to video films. Like, it's a niche, right? But they've so very clearly defined it and clearly delivered it, and kind of developed it hand in hand with comic book conventions, you know, all over the country, where they launch. You know, they have a consistent schedule, and it's profitable, right? Like, they keep making them because they're good enough that people love them, you know, and they buy them. And they're always fascinating, and when they kind of do one thing, you know, like they can kind of turn and do another and change styles and tones. Even though a lot of the voice actors are kind of consistent, it's still interesting and probably have created some of the best classic DC graphic novel like adaptations. Their Dark Knight is like exactly how Dark Knight should be if it moved.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's probably the only way to describe it. But until you start seeing them, you don't, it's hard to picture it because it kind of exists off in this little direct-to-video side world. I mean, they've got, you know, it's got a huge number of fans, but if you don't go to Comic-Cons, you may not even know that that exists.
Definitely. Just before that Batman Hush premiere, over in 32, there's another one of the Shout Factory panels where they're mm-hmm. going to be featuring, they're producing this new documentary on Star Trek Deep Space Nine called What We Left Behind. Oh. And they're going to be releasing that on home video. And I think that might be coming out like this month or maybe in early August. I can't remember now, but it's they're gonna have a panel for it, and I can't remember if that's gonna be for sale at the booth. I don't think it is, but it might be. Maybe they'll have early copies of it. But
you can always check your booth and go to see Batman Hush.
and if you can't, you know, if you have to go to something else, there's gonna be an encore presentation of Hush also in Ballroom 20.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And then also, as usual, there is every Friday at Comic-Con, Jerry Beck will be there with the Worst Cartoons Ever, where he curates a pretty amazing and hilarious and cringeworthy selection of old cartoons that you maybe didn't know about or can't believe were ever really made.
And he will be talking about a new this month Warner Archive release, which is directly inspired by this panel. And that is Johnny Cypher and Dimension Zero. We've released all 125 episodes in a set. I don't know how many human beings have been able to see all 125 episodes, but it is a unique vision of the future as supplied by the people at Seven Arts, having a Japanese studio kind of make these things in a rush. One of my favorite villains that I discovered that they use more than once is Space Napoleon. And he has a French accent, and he likes to invade other planets. And he really does have an assistant who's called Le Bonheur. I was like, Le Bonheur? Yes. I think that's French. I don't know what it's French for, but that's his henchman.
So
it's crazy. They freeze the sun. And then the people complain that now it's cold, so then they drill holes in the sun to restart it. Like, that's the kind of logic. It's like a kid fell asleep after eating too much chocolate and hallucinates something that's then reinterpreted by Japanese people locked in a room.
So that Johnny Cypher and Dimension Zero is going to be available the week after Comic-Con, is that right? It's on the at the end of July?
23rd, I think pre-orders are available now.
Okay.
It is definitely the most, it's definitely our craziest DVD set of the year. Yes, it is the craziest.
So, and then after the Worst Cartoons Ever, as always, they do the Spike and Mike Sick and Twisted.
I just like it. And after the Worst Cartoons Ever, it's like, well, why would you stay? Oh, because they're awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry.
A few things outside of the convention on Friday. There's going to be at the Horton Grand Theater at noon, there's going to be a fan celebration of Batman in animation. So if you're a fan of Batman Beyond or Batman the Animated Series, then you should definitely go to that too. There's going to be a panel on becoming a board game designer that looks kind of interesting.
Cool.
Oh, another one of the, so this one is at the Comic-Con Museum, which I think opened up, but
it isn't technically open yet, but they are having like a preview of it during the convention, and that is open to people who do not have badges.
But they're going to do another one of the Hollywood, they call it Hollyweird Science, and I think that's like another one of the kind of like science of TV and movies stuff.
Well, if you're in San Diego without a badge, good place to go.
So let's talk a little bit about Saturday. Let me just find
Saturday, 10 a.m. There are about 20 panels to start the day.
Yeah.
A lot of them look really good, but the best one, I think, is this one called The Jetsons and Primetime Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not want to do that as like a Saturday morning cartoon kind of throwback? And, you know, The Jetsons coming to Blu-ray is just like the most amazing news. And if I can get up that early and make it to Comic-Con by 10 a.m., then I will be at that panel.
The world premiere in HD. We are going to be having it's like this Jetson Palooza, but we're also going to be covering some of the talking about like the Flintstones, Top Cat, and Johnny Quest, and these are important because for television at least, these are the first cartoons made for adults, really the whole family, but we mostly remember them now because they were syndicated and have lived forever for kids. But after a few more experiments in the 70s with some primetime animation, it really didn't gain popularity until The Simpsons, and has been chugging along ever since. So we may be having, depending on availability, Willie Ito, who was an artist at the original Hanna-Barbera, who's one of the last people remaining. And we have one of the original writers of the Jetsons. And he was there, he created Astro, and he was there, and he was kind of in charge of taking what the sitcom, because they hired a bunch of sitcom writers, and they he had to like storyboard and add gags around it. So it's going to be really, really interesting.
Isn't there, what day is this one? There's a spotlight on Willie Ito. Oh, it's on Saturday. Okay, so it's later that day.
Yeah.
In room 8, there's going to be a spotlight on him, on Willie Ito, talking more about, you know, working on like working for Disney, working for Warner Brothers and Hanna-Barbera and Sanrio and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's incredible. And Tony Benedict, the writer, was only 23 when he was hired in 1960. And that's right as the Flintstones, and he worked on some other things too, but as the Flintstones and these other shows were taking off, and he was there until 1967. And so he has a lot of great stories about those days and working with Hanna and Barbera, and, you know, how they ran the business and their personalities meshed and clashed. So we're going to be doing that, and we're going to be watching some Jetsons in HD. And what's interesting is we're kind of focusing a little more on the primetime and maybe the sitcom-y kind of aspect of it. But of course, everybody, when you think of the Jetsons, the reason why the Jetsons are in the national or even international consciousness is it's probably the most successful and influential vision of retrofuturism.
Totally.
Right. I mean, it goes without saying is that the design and the way that the characters interacted with the technology of, quote, 100 years in the future is, it's fascinating because, like, even in the first episode, George Jetson is complaining that his finger hurts from hitting a button too much. And like, that's comedic, but I have the same problem with poking my iPhone. And like, I've noticed my finger starts to hurt.
One of my favorite fan theory, you know, do you ever read that fan theory Reddit subreddit where people go off on things? Anyway, there's one,
yeah.
there's a fan theory of like, what if the Jetsons and the Flintstones are actually taking place at the same time, and the Jetsons are like in the world up above where the Flintstones are happening down below on the earth.
Okay, now we have one that's separate that I think is better. Now, first of all, and also, as I watched all 24 episodes of the Jetsons, they go on the ground quite a few times.
Oh, okay. Well, that just
so people just don't remember the ground. But there's like a good gag with a bird on the ground, and he's like, "It's too busy up there," because the bird, of course, is hilarious. And also, Spacely Sprockets is on the ground in some episodes. I'll point that out. But in Jetsons Meet the Flintstones of 1989, Elroy invents a time machine where he goes back in time. He's trying to go forward in time, but it malfunctions and he goes back in time to meet the Flintstones. But Dan Ferrante of the Warner Archive podcast came up with the theory, what if Elroy's invention worked and he went ahead to a post-apocalyptic world where the Flintstones are the future? And then that explains why there are hyper-intelligent animals.
Yes.
And that they have these memories of the technologies, because that you can't be a modern Stone Age family without having like this sort of cargo cult like echo of the past.
Totally.
Right. Does that's that, a, I think that's more mind blowing.
That's a good theory.
Yeah. So just thought I'd point that out.
Is that...
Where are we? Oh, we're still at 10 a.m.
Wait, now I'm like busy looking away. Like, was the Jetsons Meet the Flintstones, was that released on... There's an
DVD
that was only on
Warner
DVD.
Archive.
Okay, so there's no HD version of that available. I'm looking right now.
No,
okay.
There is no HD version of that.
Because there's like
no,
HD was... versions of some of those Flintstone movies now available,
yeah.
Like on Amazon and stuff, but not anyway.
Yeah, they're not on Blu-ray though.
Yes.
But there are some HD. Yeah. Well, who knows?
Who knows?
There are a lot of seasons of the Flintstones, but there is only one season of the original Jetsons. So that's why it's out.
Wait, why do you say original Jetsons? Was there a sequel to it?
Well, because some people, like in the DVDs, call that season one.
Uh-huh.
We just call it Jetsons, the original series.
Oh, I get you.
Right, because then they made some in the 80s that they... And they did the same thing with Johnny Quest, where they made new episodes and would show new and old. And the 80s Jetsons have the character Orbity. Everybody's favorite. It's like the scrappy do of the Jetsons.
Yeah. There are actually a couple of other panels at 10 a.m. that I would like to go to.
They
if
look
I could.
Good.
So like there's also a panel where Walt Simonson and Stan Sakai are going to be talking together.
Okay. That's good.
It's going to
be the IDW, right?
The IDW, yeah. And then also there's a panel on The Dragon Prince, the Netflix show. I guess like if anything, Miranda would probably want to go to that one because she likes
she
that
know
show
what
a lot.
Jetsons are.
I would make her go to the Jetsons one though.
It's good. It's got robots.
Yeah. Later on in that same room where the Jetsons panel is going to be, there's a Lego panel and then also a Scooby-Doo panel.
Oh, well, that's a good day.
Yes, that's going to be a good one. The Scooby-Doo's 50th birthday bash. I presume that they're, like, this has already been announced, like the Blu-ray set, but are they going to be, do you know, are they going to be showing off like the Blu-ray of the Scooby-Doo series?
I don't know exactly how they're doing that, but that sounds like a good guess.
Okay.
I run my panels off of a laptop, so I... You know, make sure I get the correct HD in there. But I know Gary generally does those, who also does our panels, and he gets the right things, right place at the right time. Except when he forgot a video once and had to run back to his room while we were playing videos off my iPhone. But other than that, spotless.
right around the same time as the Scooby-Doo panel, there's going to be a panel on The Expanse in the Indigo Ballroom.
I love The Expanse.
Yeah, me too. There's also a Westworld panel in Hall H. You know, Saturday is a kind of a weird day for Hall H. Like, that Westworld panel, I hope, would be full, but I don't know if it will be, just because, like, right before that, like, there's no big Saturday morning Hall H event for people to, like, camp out for.
Right.
Unless they're planning on camping out all day for the Marvel panel, which is, like, way later in the afternoon.
Some people who just go and camp out in Hall H, and they're like, I was at Comic-Con.
Yeah, like, that's their experience. Like, that's the only thing that's worth going for.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, at that table, where if we're looking at 1 p.m., there's, like, a J. Michael Straczynski panel. There's George Takei. I mean, yeah. that's like, right there. That's, like, a whole afternoon, and that's all at the same time.
There's a Cartoon Voices panel also.
Those are always fun.
Totally.
I love those. They're not my favorite, though. I've already said my favorites.
There's a panel on the continuing legacy of Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is another panel that I think Miranda might be into, because we just recently showed her. Yeah, we just watched the whole series with her, and we haven't started watching The Legend of Korra yet, but that's kind of on the horizon of what we're going to do next. They've started reading the Dark Horse comics, and
wow.
Charmaine and Miranda are, and now I think Netflix is currently, like, in the process of making a live action series based on Avatar that's going to kind of hopefully,
yes,
like, like, brush aside the bad memory of the M. Night Shyamalan adaptation.
Well, you know, memories are always alive and well in the world of never expiring film libraries. Yes.
Also in Hall H, I guess, like, after the Westworld panel, they're going to do the animation show of shows, the 20th annual one. And those are always fun. Like, they always manage to put together just an amazing, it's an interesting kind of complement to the Spike and Mike animated, you know, festivals. Like, the animation show of shows feels like he really wants to kind of, I forget the guy's name who runs those, but he wants to, you know, just really promote, like, and show people, like, how amazing some of these short animated films can be, and, like, you know, tries to get together with, like, you know, the best people that are making little short animated things.
What time is that one?
That one's at 2:45, I think.
Oh, and you're at 2:45. I'm still looking at the ones from 2:00.
Oh yeah, there's,
you,
like,
totally skipped Sid and Marty Krofft.
I was just about to say that one. It's highlighted on my sheet in front of me.
The 50th anniversary of Sid and Marty Krofft is the perfect thing. I saw a panel for Geek Travel. Is it a thing? Yes. I do it all the time. I've gone on a game of I've gone on two Game of Thrones tours where I just happen to be at all the locations where George R. R. Martin must have gone on vacation at some point in the 90s and created a $1 billion empire. I just went on a vacation and created credit card debt. And nerdy finance, valuable tax advice for freelancers.
Oh,
come
man.
On, people.
How can you not go to that one?
You know, I might. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, then 2:30 is the spotlight on Willy Ito, so.
Yeah, you got to go to that one.
There's so much stuff. Okay, so we're at 3:00 now.
So we're at 3:00. One thing that I'll jump over to at 4:00 at
all
the...
right, let's go to 4:00. Let's skip it. Go have lunch.
Yeah, go have lunch. But then this is going to be one of those things that I think,
because we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes, so we can skip that.
There's at the Horton Grand Theater, there's a panel on Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the new adaptation.
Yeah.
But it's going to be with the director and Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be, I think, a thing to try to get into.
I think there are only like 500 seats for that.
Yeah, I hope I can get into that.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. But I don't, I bet that's going to either, it's going to be full pretty fast, I think.
Well, I mean, it's, there's probably a line for it right now. A week is three, a week and one day ahead of time.
I mean, like, that should be in Hall H. Like, why is that not in Hall H, but then, you know, this, like, Entertainment Weekly, women
they call it a master class. So it's like, you know, 498 of your close personal student friends. But what a memory that would be if you could get in.
Yeah. Later on in the early evening, there's going to be a panel on being a journalist, like, you know, or like a, I guess it, I think this is more from like the comics journalism perspective, but
they need more comics journalists.
Yeah. It's like the online journalist panel that usually happens every year. There's also a panel on the music of monsters, which looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Then later on, so this is the night where the Shout Factory panel is going to be. That's usually where they announce all of the
all the discs
that they're working on, or stuff that they haven't already shared.
Right.
But right before that, in the same room, there's going to be the panel, The Bold Voices of Contemporary Horror.
Oh.
And those are like, for the past few years, Jen Yamato, who writes for the LA Times, and a few other women film journalists have kind of hosted those panels. And so this is usually a good time to kind of like come learn about some independent or like lower budget horror movies that are out there that maybe like you haven't heard about, or, you know, it might be just a fun place to go hear like the filmmakers talk about.
I've seen some really good and high quality indie horror panels at Comic-Con. And again, it's genre you'd kind of think it was there, but you can find them and you can meet the creators and stuff. Like, it's, but what's interesting is I think a lot of people don't know about them, or they're not, I don't know, they're good, they're, because you can always kind of get into these panels, and they're always, if you're a film fan, they're incredible, and you get to see previews of things that you normally wouldn't see. I kind of think of it as like the Shudder crowd.
Yeah,
you know, totally. The streaming service Shudder, which I really like, because it's offbeat horror.
And then, let's see, is there anything else? So, like, it's interesting also looking at, like, when that Shout Factory panel is going on, because it's like they're also cross, like, creating these panels that are things that people in that Shout Factory panel would probably want to go to. Like, there's a panel on, like, Night Gallery. There's a panel on, like, the Scream Queens. And it's just like, why are you putting those all at the same time? That doesn't make any sense.
It is almost like the horror movie stuff gets kind of pushed. I think that's probably why it's there. Because like they kind of think in blocks.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's Saturday morning cartoons, they tend to be in Saturday morning, like the morning. You know, except for Sid and Marty Krofft, they got a good time slot.
Yeah, and then there's also like a trauma panel later that night too.
Yeah, see, like that's what I'm thinking, is the thinking. But I don't know. I'm just guessing. What's happening on Sunday? Well, this will be the first day that I don't have to get up early, so I'll be sleeping.
So Sunday.
And then I'll be confused.
Sunday is that Scooby-Doo Zombie Island. Excellent. Movie, and then right after that is the Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans one, also. And then after that is the Batman Family Matters Lego movie.
Oh, that'll be good.
So that's like, if you wanted to go watch Warner Home Video.
Wait, did movie. You say Family Matters?
Yes.
Like Urkel?
Well, it's that's what the movie is called, DC Batman Family Matters.
Oh, no, it's not that. Okay, yeah, no, I don't think that is, I don't think there's Urkel, because it's like, and I was half listening to it in a different way, and I was like, Batman teams up with Urkel? Because I'd be so there for that. Maybe that is what it is, and I just wasn't paying attention.
On Sunday, there's a spotlight on William Stout. So All right, if you, If you
I'm
love,
still loving the idea of Urkel teaming up with Batman. Just like, come on, Batman.
He seems like it seems like they could easily get him onto Scooby-Doo also. Like Scooby-Doo, they're always bringing in the guest.
Yeah. You know, he'd be perfect for Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But I would more want to see him with Batman. And he'd be, because he'd have his own inventions.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm now going to write the plot. Okay, let's go back to panel.
William Stout, if you love cool drawings of dinosaurs, then you probably have seen William Stout's art at some point. And so he's going to have a spotlight there. There's going to be a publishing comics for kids panel that might be kind of fun. Cool. You know, this is like Sunday is the kids' day. And so like it's when there's a lot more stuff geared towards the younger audiences. Oh, there's a panel with Floyd Norman, the Disney animator. And so there's going to be a panel. I think they've done panels with him in the past few years. And he might also be on another Disney animation panel that I mentioned like on Thursday, I think.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to have it. He's a featured guest again this year. And so it's always fun to hear him talk.
I'm going to pitch here for a noon panel, which has, it's a science fiction author panel with Greg Bear, David Brin, and Larry Niven. And it's about time travel, which is my, probably my favorite sci-fi concept because it's fun. But I love time travel panels. I don't know why. Because it's the endless argument of time travel. Since we can't do it, except we move 1 second into the future at a time, that that is the one thing we do pretty frequently.
You know, actually, now that you mentioned that, it's I was going to mention this on Friday, but like, it's interesting how they're setting up, how they're structuring Hall H on Friday morning, because they have like, instead of have like to kind of fill the void of like some, one of the studios, I guess, since like they're having a Marvel panel, but like there's two kind of Avengers panels. So the first one is writing Avengers Endgame. And then the second one is a conversation with the Russo brothers. But I kind of imagine that like those two panels will kind of just like bleed together.
Sure.
Because they're so connected.
Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. But I wonder if there will be like, you know, like nitpicky fans up on the mic asking about the time travel implications that's featured in Avengers Endgame and, you know,
pre-screen those questions. And by the way, I am a miserable person to talk to about that stuff. I've been told to be quiet more than once. And then like, you know, the new Spider-Man movie comes out and they make like two jokes and I'm like, that is the correct way to handle it, but it still would mess up so much stuff that it you know, but again, it's comic book, you have to ignore it, but it my little brain just goes it's terrible. If I was a more serious person, I would be up there asking questions.
Well, you could go to on Sunday, you could go to the 2 o'clock Science of Spider-Man Far From Home panel and ask those questions.
No, you know what? I give Spider-Man all the credit for handling it. I don't blame them for any time travel shenanigans. they get a pass.
Yeah.
I love the Spider-Man movies. I think I'm allowed to say that. They're fun.
Anything else on Sunday that you want to talk about? Like there's more cartoon voices panels. There's a panel on IDW talking about like their artist editions, which are like these amazing collector items, the books that they do.
When my eyes just go over a panel, I look for a panel name that grabs me, and one that grabs me is the 3:30 panel called Trivia for Chocolate. And they're comics trivia questions. And, you know, like I would never know them, but the first person who yells out the correct answer is awarded a small piece of chocolate. And then they say at the end, the person who has won the most small pieces of chocolate gets a really big piece of chocolate. I don't even know what it's about, right? It says just trivia for chocolate. It could be like, I'm sure it's genre related or something, or it seems to have to do with comics. that would get me into a panel.
Yeah.
Bribery.
How did they pitch this panel?
I love it. Trivia for chocolate. And the person who gets the most little chocolate gets a big piece of chocolate. Like, why wouldn't you go to that? Should be a TV show.
And when you look at the schedule page, it's like right underneath that trivia for chocolate at 3:45 is the gastronomically geeky game and movie cookbooks. Like, why aren't those two panels like one after another?
I don't know. There's 15 minutes and you're not going to win enough chocolate to make it. Like, I mean, you could buy chocolate, but that's not the same as winning it.
No.
And then 4 o'clock, that's like the end. Have you ever gone to the last panel of a convention?
No, 4 to 5 o'clock? I mean, I have definitely closed down Comic-Con. Like, I've been on the floor as they're shooing everyone out.
Yeah, I've been on the floor.
But I don't know if I've ever been in a panel for that last hour. I don't think I have. I think I always have just like gone to the floor by then.
I have. Closed out. I've hosted the final panel, which is always kind of fun because there's like this moment and then it's like school's out for the year. We did our GoBots panel was like the last convention panel, which was, by the way, one of my favorite panels that I was on because I it was so much fun for me to ask serious questions about the GoBots. And there was like a loyal legion of Transformers fans, because the GoBots are now part of the Transformers universe, who were there in like a small clump, because it was a big room. It was like almost a 1,000-person room, and there were maybe like 50 or 60 Transformers fans were the only ones there. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. I recommend going to a final panel because it is like the perfect moment of anticlimax.
Going off a toy tangent real fast, now that you mentioned GoBots and Transformers, way back on Thursday at 12:30, if you're not in one of the other panels like Batman Beyond or Leonard Maltin, there's a panel on the Netflix show The Toys That Made Us. And so if you like you know, old 80s toys, you should watch that show. It's actually pretty interesting. And they have a lot of great history in it. But that might be a fun panel to go to. They've done 2 seasons of it so far, and each kind of featuring like, you know, 4 or 5 different toy lines. And they do talk about, like, I think they talk about the GoBots in the Transformers episode, maybe.
As they should.
I guess
Do they talk about the Mighty Orbot available on DVD? Because that has an interesting history on the toy line, is that there was a lawsuit involved and they had to shut down the Orbot production.
As I was watching The Toys That Made Us recently, I've been getting into finding more YouTube content to watch and channels and stuff. And for the past 6 months or so, I've been watching pretty like religiously watching all of the videos that this guy who runs this YouTube channel called Toy Galaxy. He did a Mighty Orbots episode. He's done like GoBots and Transformers. Yeah. Okay. He's an amazing like toy historian on YouTube. Uh-huh. And if anyone is into toys and 80s toy history, and he also does episodes when he's not talking about toys, he does do episodes on like the history of certain shows. And he has just an incredible, presence on the channel. But I think like he just really gets into like the nerdy details of the history of some shows and toy lines.
That's the magical thing about that everybody owns a network TV studio in their pockets now. And I like that people are getting better at it, right? Yeah,
totally.
Like it was a skill for the few and the trained, and now it's like everybody is going to be a super expert in something. As maybe not everybody, but they should be. Let's put it that way. I was watching they have these incredible retro history computer shows that I've been watching about people who obsessively put old machines back together, and machines that even when they were new were kind of garbagey. But it's fascinating to watch, and these people who, you know, a lot of the people who are into it, like, they were either very young or even not alive when these machines were first out, and it's like they're almost like recreating like an experience, right? Because like using the machines themselves, like, requires like a mindset and a thought that's sort of lost. And when you put these things back together, it's almost like you can get in the mind of somebody trying to connect to the internet in 1997. Anyway, that's a fascinating thing that may be on Netflix of the future, but right now that's on YouTube. That's where the
And you know, like, even this will be like the last thing I say about this, okay. but if you're into that kind of stuff, like creating, you know, your own content, like, there are even panels at Comic-Con for you, like,
yes,
in that vein also. Like, you know, one of the things I had highlighted that's going to be at the Marriott Marquis Grand 12 room.
By the way, I love those panels in the Marriott, because that's where you get like the indie publishers.
Yes, stuff. Totally. But there's a panel on fair use and fan engagement. Oh, so like, if you are making a show about cartoons and toys and you want to know like what you're allowed to use in a video, like, or how you're allowed to use it, then you should go to that panel.
I think it was 2009. I went to, oh God, that was 10 years ago. I was just flipping through the schedule and I saw a panel in like a tiny room. Like, it was like, it held less than 50 people. It was like 45 person room. And it just said fans of fan fiction. And I was like, I'm a fan of fan fiction. And I went in and it was jam packed room full of people who half of them wrote and the other half loyally consumed Twilight fan fiction. And they had like six panelists and they all talked about how life-changing like the community was and how they learned to write through writing fan fiction. And I came out of that like, I mean, I haven't really read any Twilight, but I wanted to read. I was like, something's gonna happen with Twilight fan fiction, mark my word. And it did, and it was called 50 Shades of Grey.
I was just gonna bring that up.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly like what they talked about, how they would just like, they were writing Twilight fan fiction, and then eventually they were just gonna like, they just changed the names, and now they had something completely different. And I was so inspired by that panel. But they didn't want to put that it was fans of Twilight fan fiction because they didn't want haters there. So they just used a code word that they thought nobody would want to go to unless they knew what it was. Except for me. I was the one who was like, fan of fan fiction. This sounds great.
Are there any like toys or movie memorabilia or anything like that that you're going to be hunting for as you shop around on the floor?
So Dan, my Warner Archive podcast co-host, comes and shows me things and I go, do not show me that. Because there are so many cool things and I am like, I'm not allowed, but I've seen a few things, but I've purposefully tried to forget them.
Yeah.
Cause it's hard. Do you know what I saw just today? Like, somehow I'm passing, and this has nothing to do with Comic-Con, but it has everything to do with all the terrible things in my brain. I just saw somebody post like, oh, there are these 3/4 scale, recreations of vintage arcade, machines that are being sold at Walmart. And they're marked down from $400 to $300.
Do they have like little like Raspberry Pi emulators inside of them to so you can play them?
So they are like three quarters, meaning like, you know, like they're like almost, it's like a weird railroad, right? It's yeah. like 75% of the size, not 25.
Oh, so okay. Big. So they're still pretty big. Like they would fit on, but they would be like on your desk, I guess.
No, no, they're on the ground. And some of the, you can buy for $30 or $40, like a riser, which makes them the same height.
That is a that's a weird size.
And they have like the full size controllers and like, they have like the trackballs, and then they use modern LCD screens, but it runs, you know, the emulators are supposed to be pretty good, right? And but the graphics are spot on, and some of them have like 12 games in them, some one game, like it's just like Street Fighter.
Yeah.
But I went and I'm like looking and I'm throwing like four arcade machines in a cart. And like, it's like $1,200, but free shipping. And I'm like, what am I doing? Wait. No, no, no. And I had to put them all. I had to never go to Walmart ever again. But like, that's incredible that that's at a freaking Walmart for an affordable price. Like they look good. They had Missile Command with like a giant trackball.
The people at Mondo are going to have a few cool things that I'm tempted to buy, like the Who Framed Roger Rabbit like soundtrack on vinyl that has like
wow.
this cool like green and yellow kind of, I guess it's like the
it's supposed to look like the slime or the acid.
Yeah, what is that stuff called, like this soup? Is that no, it's not soup.
Well, it was like the thing at the end that they were dumping the characters into.
Yeah, exactly, and like melting them.
Yeah. Okay, I'm all for that.
So that's good. And they're selling pins too.
Have you ever read the book?
No, but I probably should.
Read the Who Framed Roger Rabbit book.
Like the novelization?
Because, no, it was they based it off of a book.
Oh.
And the book is, it was written for adults. It was a very clever noir classic cartoon pastiche. And it, you know, the concept is in there, but it's like more Raymond Chandler, uh-huh. right? And then what's of course brilliant about the film is that they brought the noir element in, but it's heavily implied. Like the movie is when you see it as an adult, it's way more adult than you realize, and totally nails film noir. I just saw it last year in the big screen, and I couldn't shut up about it for about 6 months. So anyway, shout out to that movie totally. As an adult, and read the book. Okay, that's it. That's my 3 minutes on Roger Rabbit.
I don't know if there are any other like cool film geek related toys or things that I'm super excited about. I mean, like there's people at Shout Factory are gonna have a cool like werewolf statue for the Howling.
All right, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And then they have like, you know, Mystery Science Theater socks and
they do a great job with yeah. with what they bring, and their booth is always fantastic. One of the biggest comments I get from my cubicle at work is I'll go to like memorabilia area, like more in the A and B section.
Yeah.
And I found these like I forget the name of the poster, but it's like the really thin, long posters, like mm-hmm. quarter sheets, but they're thin and long, and they were like $5 vintage, but they're beautiful, and B, I know a lot of the movies from them, like the weird B and C and D movies from like the 50s and 60s, and even actually some of them up into the 80s, and I just hung them all over my cubicle. Ruining them, of course. They survived for 50, 60 years in a warehouse, unblemished. And as soon as I get a hold of them, like I still take care of posters as well as I did my freshman year of college when I just taped them to the wall.
That same part of the convention center is great for finding like soundtracks on CD, like obscure yep. soundtracks on CD that are hard to find. Finding like stuff. There's one booth that always brings like boxes and boxes of old movie programs, like movie press programs, like
yeah, press packets.
Yeah, the press packets. Those are so awesome.
I love old press packets, and yeah. it's like there aren't that many of them around because they got tossed, but and they're very rarely complete. But just sometimes when you get like the old like folders that people made like for movies, I just love those. Yeah. Oh, this is why it's a Comic-Con is so large and serves so many people, and it really is like the closest thing we have to a pop culture medieval trade fair.
Yeah.
it really is almost anything that you can imagine. And it's I think that I've said this to you before, that if I was ever Groundhog Day'd, I would definitely want it to be during San Diego Comic-Con, because then I'd actually get to see everything. Like, I definitely would have, it would take me an additional 1,000 years to get really bored and start, like, you know, killing myself.
Speaking of, actually going back real fast to that Deep Space Nine documentary, I'm looking at the Shout Factory list of exclusives, and they are going to sell the movie at the booth. It doesn't come out until August 6th, but they're going to have it available to buy there. And if you do, you get like a little poster for it too.
Cool.
Yeah. So I guess that's about it. I think we should probably call it a night here.
Oh, I'm going to say one more thing. Okay. Last year, I did something that I'd never done before. On Sunday, before I went shopping, I went and decided I was going to go through the mezzanine level, which is hard to find, but it's where like gaming and stuff is.
It's where the guys dress up in their armor and have sword fights.
Yes. And then you kind of go around back and there are all these like crazy gaming events. And I actually played Dungeons and Dragons, like an official thing where they had a special module that was like about going to medieval Comic-Con. That's why when I said medieval Comic-Con, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't make that up. That was like in a thing that I did. And it was really strange to be at Comic-Con playing Dungeons and Dragons, which I had not done. But that's what I mean by like having a Groundhog Day experience. You can find, and it was like at the end of a hallway that like the lights were flickering and it looked like an elf was going to come out and murder me for my like 2 gold pieces. Like it was, maybe that was my imagination.
So I've been going to Comic-Con for a long time now, like since the early 90s. And
yeah,
before preview night was a thing that you could go into,
right,
my brother and I would go to the mezzanine level, and like they have like the windows looking out onto the conventions.
Down. Yeah,
you could sneak into the mezzanine area and look at everyone setting up the booths. And eventually, like they were much more lax on like letting people just go in whenever.
Right.
And so like we would definitely sneak in on preview night and look like walk around, but like no one would sell you anything because they weren't set up for it yet.
Right.
But like you could still kind of look around and see where the booths were that you wanted to go to.
Yeah. You were gaming, but the Comic-Con game. All right. Well, that was like an hour and 40 minutes of fun.
Yeah, that was much longer than the 30 or so minutes I was kind of thinking, oh, we'll run through this real fast.
Well, me too. I have to do work. I'm still at work. It's like almost 11 p.m. and I'm like, oh, I got more to do.
All right, we'll finish that V panel. And
yeah, I gotta work on that.
Well, thanks so much, Matt, for joining us on the podcast tonight. I'll have links for where people can find you and find the Warner Archive Collection at Comic-Con so they can stop and meet you guys and take a look inside of the magic briefcase that you have.
If you follow us, if you've gotten this far, by the way, congratulations.
Yeah.
And for that, if you find me and I have a black bag that has a Warner Archive logo on it, a rolling suitcase, there are free DVDs and Blu-rays inside. Stop me and I will give you one. How's that?
That sounds great.
I do that for everybody.
Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you at Comic-Con.